afternoon, and thanks for listening to Ask the Mayor here on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. In studio with me this week is West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. We'd love to have your telephone calls in the next half an hour. Dial 765-496-1999. Email questions to ask@wbaa.org or tweet them at WBAA News on Twitter. Well, you have one less thing on you than the last time I saw you, which is you're without the Batman costume that we saw the other day.
Did you see some of those pictures?
I saw all of those pictures. They were all over. They got that. Those pictures of you and Mayor Rozworski, was he a cowboy or
I think
cattle
he was just,
rustler? What was he?
He was just badly dressed. He dresses like that all the time, but usually he's got more polish on his shoes.
Those pictures went viral so fast the other day for Halloween.
The cool thing was that in some of those shots, I really did look like Batman.
With the exception of the beard and all
that.
I
was the Ben Affleck having a hard day Batman.
I see. it's the darker Batman we've seen in more recent years.
Truly the Dark Knight.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So... well, welcome anyhow, with or without the costume.
Yes, it is always such a pleasure to be here, Stan.
I'm sure you mean that.
I do, really.
let's get right into it. I want to start with some listener questions. We had a listener who called in after the attack that happened in New York and wanted to know a little bit about whether such things are ever planned for prevention-wise in West Lafayette. And the caller says that they wonder, especially about the new islands that are designed to separate car traffic from bike traffic, can they be made more visible? The listener says cars are clipping them, coming close to hitting bikers, and they're kind of extrapolating this into the safety in general of bikers and pedestrians. Mm-hmm. And so let's open that out to a broader question about New York, which is what the listener is asking about. Mm. Do you ever plan for the possibility of heaven forbid, an attack like that?
Yeah, we actually do. And it's an unfortunate part of the planning process now. And I can take this back to my other life when I was a police officer in Lafayette. We used to host downtown festivals in Lafayette all the time. We would have all these sort of open gathering spaces dedicated for different public events. And there was always the presumption that something might go wrong. But back in those days, the presumption was much less. We would, as they say, practice as you play. We'd always have drills that would, in the event of, and usually it was a sniper because, back in the days, because we inherited a lot of fear from the 60s. So back in the day, we were fearful of the potential of somebody, having a political agenda and then, using a rifle to sort of exercise that. The mass sort of, the multiple deaths, the mass, interactivity with whether it be vehicles or an explosive device, that came later on and towards the end of my law enforcement career. And regardless of what we do as emergency services personnel, as local government, there's always somebody that can compromise that. But regardless, we still feel that it's our responsibility to do some things, hence what we've done on State Street. I think a couple radio shows ago, we had conversations about the bollards that we're putting in on State Street. Mm-hmm. And that is for that very specific reason. We have shut State Street down before in the past, and when we did that, we usually did it with policemen and barricades. Now we'll have bollards, and they would be there designed specifically to prevent people from driving vehicles through the crowded area. The other thing that we do is that we train for getting people out. A lot of times when something really bad happens, there's such mass hysteria that it's difficult to extract people who are hurt. So we've got our TAC teams, our law enforcement folks, and our fire departments. They practice to be able to do that. But from the engineering perspective, having the separated and barriered bike lanes is a pretty strong deterrent. But if somebody has their mindset on doing something wrong, it really is difficult to try and counter. The best thing that you can do is have a comprehensive plan, have strategies for the what if, and then also have that sort of dark strategy on in the event of how you handle the situation and how you get people to safety.
We've got some people calling in, and if you get a busy signal, just feel free to call back. We had a couple of people call simultaneously, so I want to let people know that if you're dialing 765-4 1999. Just keep trying, and eventually you'll get through.
That's kind of neat, though.
It is neat. We had another person who has written in. Wendy wrote in and said, since the city and campus are becoming more bike-friendly, I've noticed more bike riders choosing risky riding practices. She says, several times a week, I see bike riders who do not slow down or even look for cross traffic when approaching a stop sign. Does the city have plans for stepping up fines for bike riders not adhering to the rules of the road?
We do. We actually got in trouble for that a couple of years ago because we were enforcing the laws as they applied to bicyclists on sidewalks. The hardest thing to do, again, because a lot of police officers, unless they're doing dedicated foot patrol in the village area, they're so highly visible, specifically with a pedestrian or a bicyclist, that they choose to, you know, do their misbehavior when the car passes by. You know, as they say, the greatest way to prevent crime is to have a police car where crime's going to happen. But then again, when there's a police car, crime doesn't happen. They take it somewhere else. But we do what we can. You know, the high visibility patrol, and this isn't just for West Side, it's for the Purdue Police Department as well. We do what we can. We also conduct bicycle training classes that's run through the West Lafayette Police Department, because believe it or not, there's a lot of folks that really do not understand the responsibility of being a bicyclist. But we live in a world where everybody's hurried. We live in a world where people need to get from point A to point B as quickly as possible. Sort of with the new, what's the word I want to use? It's like the new style of bike, the radical bicyclists, where they can jump over things and they can ride on single wheels and they can do all kinds of, you know, acrobatics with a bike. The propensity is that they're going to sort of translate that riding style into how they get from point A to point B. But if we're in a position to correct them, we will.
Talking about giving out more tickets?
If necessary. Oftentimes, believe it or not, a warning is, at least on the first contact, unless they're doing something completely ridiculous, that usually satisfies, because, again, they just don't realize that they have to obey the same rules of the road the cars do.
A couple of summers ago, I remember there was a bicycle cop who would sit at the top of Chauncey Hill with his bike mm-hmm. on the sidewalks, usually yelling at scofflaws who were riding their bikes on the sidewalks, but indeed going after other people as well. Is that the kind of thing we could see more of?
Yeah, we actually, during the summer months, we always try and get a few more officers out on bicycles. Bicycle patrol isn't just a good way for prevention. It's also a good way for the police officers to interact with the community that they serve. One of those proven theories is that a police officer in a squad car is much less approachable than a police officer on foot or on a bicycle. So we encourage that. We've got a few bikes in the police department. The biggest issue is staffing, obviously. But Chief Tomkowski is really a strong proponent of that positive interaction between law enforcement and the civilians that we serve. So, yeah, you can see a lot more of that coming up in the future.
A few more listener questions have come in, a couple that relate to the same sort of subject. One person just called in and said they wondered if there was any truth to a rumor that the West Lafayette Recycling Center was closing.
Nope.
No truth at all.
No, the neat thing about that is that we don't just serve West Lafayette. That's there for everybody. The challenge with that is that it fills up very quickly. So the recycling toters, those great big roll-offs, we try to empty them whenever they get close to full, because if we don't, then the stuff blows everywhere and it creates a secondary problem with trash. But also the reason why recycling is occurring, and it's occurring at the rate that it is because it's a business. You know, we can sell the cardboard, we can sell the plastics, we can sell the glass, or at least the place that we take it to can do that, and they can generate revenue. The bad thing that's happening now is that we're becoming so good at recycling as a population is that the market's getting saturated, so the cash value of some of those recyclables are going down. So what we do then is we go ahead and we keep it open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We're not planning on relocating it, but really it is the county, the Tippecanoe County. They're the ones who actually have the roll-offs. It's their recycling option there that they put within the city of West Lafayette. We're just the host, but it is very popular. We have at least 500 cars a day that use that recycling option out there at the sanitation department. So I don't want to see that stuff going into the fields and the ditches in, with around the community, so we're going to keep it there as long as possible.
So let me ask about that, because Phil has written in and he says, I recently heard what I hope is a false rumor that due to the current local economics of recycling, paper, plastic, glass, etc., that the existing process at the Westside Recycling Center is to not recycle, but to throw away material that is left there. Am I misinformed? He says, what is currently being done with the empty milk jugs that I toss into the bin? And I think probably what we're really talking about is mm-hmm. the situation where either the bins are overflowing and people mm-hmm. can't put stuff, put any more in there, or if you get to the point where you are not making enough from what you've got. Mm-hmm. Is there ever a point where he's right, where you have to do something other than just recycle like people think they are recycling?
Well, I hope not. I mean, we always want to make sure that, you know, we do the right thing, and the right thing isn't just economics. It's obviously about what's best for the population, what's best for the environment. You know, recycling started way back in the 70s, and this is way before your time, young man. But there used to be, the big issue was just throwing things away.
Right.
I mean, we as a society weren't very good at that. You know, it was one of those out of sight, out of mind, or out of car, out of mind. I don't know how many times when I was running when I was a kid, I'd get hit with a bottle. Maybe that was just me. I don't know.
You're a big target.
Yeah, target on the back. That's right. But we've moved on since then, and we now realize that we're pretty good at throwing things away, but we need to be selective about what we do throw away. Recyclables, you know, they do. They do make money for somebody, and the market is very – there's a lot of fluctuation within the market for the value of some of those products.
Well, and I've heard from both you and Mayor Rozworski mm-hmm. and others that the marginal economy, the amount you make mm-hmm. per recyclable material that's thrown away, is going down over time. Mm-hmm. And so even if you're throwing more away in a recyclable fashion, trying to reuse it, mm-hmm. you're not making it the same – you're not making the same money, and mm-hmm. thus at some point you have to worry about the bottom line.
You do. But I mean, the only thing that you can do is keep up the good fight. You know, we have recently just we had a landfill that we've gone ahead and decommissioned, and we've gone through a rather involved process to see if we can turn it back into something that can be utilized in either with the private sector or as a green space or something to that effect. And to go back to the days of if you don't need it, just throw it away. I think that we're too sophisticated as a society now. I don't think that we're going to go back to that. And the benevolence of some of these companies who actually are responsible for recyclables, even though it's driven by money, it's also driven by morality. And the hope is that they realize that there's a need for these things. And these products, they do have a finite life. I mean, the recycling sort of circle of life, let's take a piece of glass or even a milk jug or something to that effect, they can be recycled. But each time you recycle something, it degrades that particular product. So at the top of the food chain would be a glass or a bottle or something. The bottom would be those plastic bags that I hate so much that blow all over the place. Those products are, for the most part, at the end of their recyclable life.
Let's move on to some other things. And if you want to get your question to West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis on Ask the Mayor today, call 765-496-1999, email ask@wbaa.org or tweet at WBAA News on Twitter. The City Council this coming Monday is set to consider your new riverfront district mm-hmm. boundaries and also some new rules that go along with that mm-hmm. would apply to any of the businesses that might want to apply for the liquor licenses mm-hmm. that you have control of as mayor within those boundaries. Mm-hmm. Tell the listeners, if you would, what the new rules are and why you set them like you did.
Well, the rules are basically just the hours, and that they have to serve food. So it's got to be a restaurant or at least serve food, and the hours are going to be from 11 in the morning till midnight.
So specifically, we should say that the other rule says that at least 2/3 of sales have to be non-alcohol sales.
Right. So we want to make sure that there's food involved as well. The other issue is for us, we'll approach the safety issue first, and then we'll go to the development issue. But some years ago, one of my fire chief and then one of our city councilors took it upon themselves to go and visit our bars on a home game weekend night. And there is – each bar has a maximum capacity. And every bar – and this is specifically up and down State Street that was open, was packed. And not just packed to where it's full packed where it's shoulder to shoulder. And if there was an emergency, if there was a fire, or if somebody was hurt and needed to have some type of medical assistance, it would have been very difficult to be able to do that. And when we talk to student groups and when we go around just trying to get sort of a sense on what's going on, and they tell us the reason why it's that way is because there's so few choices. So with the discussion of expanding the liquor license district, that is one of the primary considerations as well. We want to make sure that the bars, I mean, sure, everybody wants to be where everybody else is, but we want to make sure that it's a safe environment for our students and for our permanent residents as well. The other thing that we want to address is we want to make sure that when people are looking at West Lafayette as a developable entity, as we're doing things with State Street, as we're getting more development, specifically with the mixed-use development up and down State Street, we want to make sure that there are options for what businesses can come there. Having that liquor license option allows for us to be a little bit more agile when it comes to recruiting and doing development.
So you've talked on this program about the safety of the bar scene mm-hmm. in West Lafayette, and somebody has called in and wonders why the city, in their view, is so supportive of the idea of breakfast club, and this is the early morning, typically a Saturday mm-hmm. before a home football game during the football season, the Purdue football season. They believe that the city is catering to the mm-hmm. breakfast club bars and the people who patronize those bars during those early morning hours on Saturdays, and we're talking about people lining up, for people who've never done this mm-hmm. or seen it, lining up at 7, 8 in the morning, sometimes
earlier now.
And so what is your view on that? Do you think the city is in fact supportive of that practice, which, I mean, let's face it, involves early morning pre-game drinking?
Yeah, binge drinking a mundo. That's pretty much what it is. I don't think there's anybody specifically within the police department that likes it. I went out, it was a couple home games ago. I had an event early in the morning, and so I decided to go by and just check out and see what Breakfast Club was. I was there with my fire chief and some firefighters and some police officers, and we were in one of those four-wheel drive, vehicles, ATV vehicles or whatever. And we're driving around, and this would have been around 8 o'clock, before 8 o'clock or around 8 o'clock. And we were up in the Village area, kind of around Harry's and Brothers in that area. And there was a lot of pedestrian traffic, but it was fairly light, comparatively speaking. Then we went down to the Neon Cactus, and it was packed. And again, typical Breakfast Club scene. Everybody was dressed up. I don't know what the theme of the event was, but I think it was near Halloween, so everybody was dressed up in rather elaborate costumes. From what I saw at that hour, things were pretty contained. It wasn't like Mardi Gras. It was fairly contained. When I was talking to the guys, they were actually complimenting the management at Neon Cactus because they at their own expense, made a lot of effort to control access to their business, and then they did the same on the inside. I went inside and looked around inside, and they did a lot to make sure that things were controlled. Because one of the biggest challenges you have is when you have a crowd of people, specifically if they're lining up, well, you know what they're doing in line. They're drinking in line. And then negative interactions can happen, or else just because of the crowd scene, when people need to move around, it could be a challenge as well.
Well, to say nothing of a violation of open container laws.
There's that, too. So anyway, Neon Cactus did a great job in sort of having a zigzagged fencing to keep the crowd moving and then keep them somewhat separated. That worked very well. But when you think about what's going on, it is sort of disturbing. The bars, their license allow for them to do what they're doing, but encouraging sort of the outlandish behavior and the excessive consumption of alcohol sort of sends a challenging message.
Well, we should say also to the caller that one of the things that your development director, Eric Carlson, talked to me about a couple of weeks ago when we did a story on this was he hopes that the rule that eventually gets passed by the city council, assuming they pass it, mm-hmm. is that this would deter the businesses that get these new liquor licenses from being open for Breakfast Club, mm-hmm. from staying open till last call. Mm-hmm. But one question I have for you is about a specific of this, that whole idea of two-thirds of sales have to be non-alcohol sales. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of in line with an existing city law.
Sure.
But how do you police that and how do you define it? Is it two-thirds of the money is spent on food or is mm-hmm. it two-thirds of the number of items sold are food versus alcohol? How do you define that?
Well, usually, and I'm not trying to cop out on this, but alcohol law oftentimes is enforced by the state. It's the state excise police that do that. And what they do, and I'm trying not to burn anybody, but usually what they do is they send young officers into the establishments to go ahead and just do a visual check. And then if they see something that's somewhat suspect, then they'll go ahead and run do an audit of the bar. And that way they can tell if they're in compliance or not. And should they, if they're not in compliance, they stand at risk of losing their license. And that's something else. And I'm sure Eric validated this as well. Our bar owners are pretty responsible. The actual owners are pretty responsible people. They don't want people getting drunk. They don't want people getting hurt. They don't want people getting sick. You know, bartenders sometimes are kids. Sometimes you've got kids serving kids. And, you know, there's an issue of judgment with that. But when you compare Purdue with other campuses, other Big Ten campuses or just other any other campus within the country, you know, the alcohol problem has been an issue for years and years and years.
So let me get back to the original question here before we diverge too far from it. Mm-hmm. In terms of what that two-thirds means, two-thirds of dollars or two-thirds of items?
I'm honestly, Stan, I don't have an answer for that. But my presumption would be it would be two-thirds of dollars.
Okay. All right. Let's move on to some other things. There are a few other things I want to get to before we get to the end of the program. Mm-hmm. The needle exchange program, we've talked about numerous times on this program. Mm-hmm. We talked last month about how a recent city council meeting and heard that you'd had something like a 98% return rate. Now we find out it's closer to 50%. Mm-hmm. Have you gotten any reports of those needles that have not been returned to the needle exchange winding up in places in West Lafayette?
Yes, actually, Councilor Bunder said that he has found one on the street in his neighborhood. And then our police officers, we have a in Tapawingo Park. It's a area right by the Wabash River on the west side. Obviously, we have often found needles in that area as well.
And we should point out to people who don't know that it's a common place for homeless people to locate.
Right, right. It's sort of a campground. And our officers go through there periodically to sort of clean things up, and they've encountered needles out in the open there as well. So, yeah, we have. And, you know, I think that all this dialogue about the needle exchange program is just so very healthy. And I've said this before, I think the pure interpretation of what Dr. Adler is trying to accomplish is of merit. It's of value. You know, nobody wants to see the spread of contagious disease, period, end of story. But as I've told you before, I think that we need to do a lot more work and make it more structured.
Well, one of the things you've said to me on this program is that you didn't think that you wanted an exchange centered in your city or even have the mobile exchange in your mm-hmm. city because you didn't think the drug problem was mm-hmm. as prevalent in West Lafayette or perhaps even extant in West Lafayette the way it is in Lafayette. Mm-hmm. But if you're finding needles mm-hmm. in Tapawingo Park and in Councilman Bunder's district, mm-hmm. doesn't that rebut what you've been saying on this program, that clearly there are people who are using those needles in your city?
Well, it may be, but we don't know where the needles source from. We just know that they end up here.
But the whole issue is not where the needles come from. The whole issue is, do you have people who are using needles in your city? And you just said you found them in at mm-hmm. least a couple different locations.
Yeah, you're right. But again, we're looking at data. A lot of these decisions are driven by data. And when you look at the map, and we've had this conversation before, on the east side of the river, there is a significant number of folks who are in need of the services. On the west side, not so much. You know, where they get their needles, we obviously know. They're not getting them in West Lafayette, but where they're using the drugs, it's here. But if you're talking about the intent of trying to provide clean needles for somebody, then obviously they're in a position to get them in Lafayette. So I still, you know, like I said, my belief system of the whole program is, like I said, I'm not a purist in believing that it's right. I don't know, you know, using what I did in my former life, I think that there's some serious, you know, legal issues that are being challenged with the needle exchange program. But understanding that it's a health need, you know, I fully respect that. But if you have limited resources and you're trying to get the greatest population base served, regardless of your feelings on it, just using it from just the clear academic perspective, you need to go where the problems are. So you need to put your resources where the problems are, and that's not in West Lafayette.
Well, but aren't we saying, though, that there's some use in West Lafayette, some use of the needles?
But I don't have any evidence to this, but you could take that argument and extrapolate it even further. You know,
I don't think anyone's arguing that the problem is worse mm-hmm. in your city than it is in Lafayette. It's mm-hmm. pretty clearly worse in Lafayette. Mm-hmm. But what I want you at some point to admit is that there is a user base in your city that warrants some consideration, because I mean there's evidence to that end.
There is. There is evidence that we have a transient population that brings needles over to this community. Because one thing we know for sure, they don't have a permanent address here.
How do you know that for sure?
Well, because they don't have an address at all. They live in tents.
Okay. Let's get to one other topic in just our last couple of minutes. You're about to start the public hearing process about a new city hall, mm-hmm. including asking people whether they want a new one at all. Mm-hmm. And so let me ask you, and I want you to, you know, be on the record about these things. First, mm-hmm. do you think the city needs a new physical city hall location?
Yeah. Oh, I don't know about a new location, but I do know that we need to have a structure that's going to accommodate the city administration. You know, the building that we're in now, it's a nice old building, but it really isn't suitable for doing city business. The department heads are spread around the entire city, and it's just not very efficient. The old building that we had was good for about 20 years, and it was there for about 40. And the good thing about it was everybody was in the same structure. So
you'd like to go back to that co-location mentality.
Yeah, I mean, it works well. Even though with all the technology we have with cell phones and computers and all that, it's really nice to have those casual hallway conversations, and that really is missing.
So do you think it'd be better for the city to build something from scratch that services whatever the needs are now, or perhaps better to repurpose an older building, which might be a little cheaper for you on the front end, but might not give you exactly what you want in terms of space?
Yes.
That's not an answer.
No, that's the whole point of what we're trying to do. It's going to be.
But what do you think? That's what I'm asking. Is what's your opinion?
Well, I think we need to be, you know, where we're going to be of the most good, be of the most use. You know, we spent time on the North End, and it was a popular location when City Hall was that gathering space. When City Hall, you know, when people came in to pay their bills, when people came in to talk to the mayor, when people, you know, came in to do a lot of business that's now being done online. And that's why I'm not trying to be evasive, because I'll go wherever it needs to go. I mean,
well, that's actually my next question is,
where does it need to go?
Right. You kind of have this north versus south mm-hmm. debate. There's a lot of people who say, put it back where it was. There's a lot of people who say, look, you're spending all this time and money and energy on State Street and on mm-hmm. the near campus area. You're clearly trying to draw people there. Why don't you put it in that neck of the woods? Mm-hmm. Pick one of those for me, north or south. Which do you want?
Well, today, if you were to ask me, I'd say south.
Okay. Why?
What you just said. I mean, we're creating this downtown environment. We have sort of this, you know, this commerce center now up and down State Street, and the connectivity to Purdue, and obviously the connectivity to our citizenry there. And it just seems as though we would be in a strong position to remodel a historic building and put it in the downtown area here. But having said that, if the citizens say, no, not that, we want you up north, then we'll do that. But I think the biggest issue we need to resolve is, what does City Hall mean now in Y2K plus 17? Usually when I speak to folks up in the north end of town, I'll speak at Westminster about every month, that question always comes up. And again, it's divided. I mean, there's always people that say, yeah, it needs to be down in the downtown area. Yeah, it needs to be up here. And I always ask, because there's always somebody that says, hey, better leave it XYZ. And then I always ask them, when's the last time you were at City Hall? ..
Crickets.
You know, yeah. They just haven't been. But I think philosophically they believe the population base is on the north end of town. You know, the commerce base is on the south. And they think that City Hall, the cliche old school City Hall, used to serve the population base, so it needs to be where the population is.
All right. Well, that's the time we've got. There were, as always, more things on my paper, but we'll get to those next month.
I'll be around.
All right. This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Remember to tune in at this time next week for our conversation with Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. Send your questions at any time to our email address, ask@wbaa.org. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.